Hi, this is Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the podcast. And today we have on a very special guest, a guy named Ian Temple of Soundfly. And he's really going to be an excellent guy to talk to on this topic of breaking through plateaus in your skill acquisition in music, in audio. And he has worked specifically in the field of kind of online education, online mentorship, online personal training for musicians. And he also has some great tips on the studio production and music production end of things that really carry over. He's seen so many people fail to break through plateaus in their journey and then see what really gets them through to the other side. So I think this is something all of us want to do. We want to learn to get better at what we're doing in music, ideally faster, with less pain, with less heartache, and with less of a chance of kind of gassing out and giving up, which happens to so many people in the audio and music space. So Ian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
All right. Psyched to have Ian on. He's really going to go through with us some of the things that hold up musicians, producers, audio engineers, people who want to embark on a creative field in music, what hold them up the most and what helps them break through their sticking spots and break through their plateaus. He has some tremendous research in this the past 5 years of running Soundfly. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that is later, but we're really going to focus mostly on things that you can apply to your craft right now. This is the last episode in this kind of theme that we've been doing here in the end of August, beginning of September. It's all about music education, learning to do better what we do. It is time to spend less time outside, sadly, now that summer's over, and more time in the woodshed, getting better at what we do. So let's talk about it. Before I dive into it, quick little shout out to this week's sponsors. We'll give them a more detailed shout out later, but big thanks to Soundtoys for sponsoring this podcast. Once again, one of my favorite plugin makers. Also, Gear Club, fantastic podcast. Check them out at gear-club.net. And last but not least, Sonic Scoop and our courses, Mixing Breakthroughs, Mastering Demystified, and Mixing Drums. All right, without further ado, Ian, how are things in Gowanus, Brooklyn today?
Good. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah. This is, fall is probably one of my favorite times of year when you get that late summer, early fall thing happening. Especially New York is a good place for the fall. They write songs about New York in the fall.
It's true. It's funny how I feel like every time there's a new season, I'm ready for that season to start and the old season to be out. So nature was a good designer.
That means you've done the season right. You know, if you're like, oh man, summer's ending. It's like, well, you didn't go to the beach enough. You should have done it. You know, if you're like, damn, fall's ending. It's like, you should have made a pie. Should have done it.
You should. It's on you.
Yes, exactly. And I have in my past gone through seasons and regretted them. And now I never do because it's like, all right, we're going to do this. Fall 2019 is only happening once. Let's get on this. Let's do the thing. And one of those things is learning to get even better at your craft as a musician or audio person. So Ian, you have been in this space for a while now, like a half a decade in helping people kind of learn to get better at what they do. What's that journey been like for you?
Yeah, I've been kind of focused and studying on education and how people learn even longer than that, because I kind of came to it from that background. And, you know, I think it's really interesting. We see so many people come to us with really similar issues, which is just oftentimes being overwhelmed by the enormity or the vagueness of what they're trying to achieve. And that's something that we kind of see a lot, and that we've tried to figure out ways to wrestle with at Soundfly and ways to advise people around.
Yeah. That is a big thing. You know, often when people go into music or into audio, they're not necessarily setting really specific and meaningful goals for themselves. And it can be a little hard to do that without some coaching, without some feedback, without hearing stories of other people that have done it. Because for those people who are really ambitious, right? Those people who are listening who like, I want to be a famous musician. Like, let's say that is the goal. It's not the goal for everybody, but it's a relatable goal. Most of us have flirted with the idea for at least some time in our lives. But that is such an amorphous goal. Like, how do you know when you've reached it? I want to be a famous, successful musician. Okay. How are you going to test that one? How are you going to know when you've succeeded? How are you going to know if you've hit milestones along the way? What should you be doing next to do that? And I think you have a very structured and focused way of thinking through questions like that. That's fantastic. And we'll get into some of that smarter goal setting in a minute. But for you, you see a lot of people get hung up. Usually when people come to Soundfly for kind of online mentorship and training and all that, it's probably because they're hitting a sticking point, a lot of them. So what do you find are some of the most common sticking points for people in the world of music? Like, what are the major hangups before we talk about ways to get through them? Just what are the things that people get hung up on that makes them stop progressing or almost want to stop with music altogether?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I don't think we knew when we started working on Soundfly. This has been a learning journey for me, kind of figuring out what people are getting hung up on. But it's amazing how it's many of the same things, and as many of the same things across, it's not only music. I mean, there's many of the same things across many different areas in your life where you're trying to learn. It's kind of how to do it, what to do, when to do it, and like, you know, can someone keep me on top of it? You know, I often talk about a few kind of themes that we see a lot are like, it's something I call the endless mountain problem, which is that people, something like I want to be famous is just like, you know, or I want to make great music. It's just this endless mountain. There's no peak you're reaching there. Like, how do you define that? Where are you going to hit? A lot of people wrestle with the uncertainty of what they should do next to reach that peak, even if they have a peak. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, obviously, I call the throw the computer out the window problem, you know, of just kind of working on something, getting so in the zone on one thing that they're frustrated by the technology or frustrated by some technical point that they just want to throw the computer out the window. And then obviously we all know about procrastination and scheduling and just like, you know, I was chatting with someone just yesterday who's like, I'm so excited about this solo project I'm about to launch involving Ableton and a loop pedal and, you know, stuff like, and I'm like, oh, awesome. How long have you been working on it? She's like, 2 years. And where's it at? And she's like, oh, well, I haven't actually started yet. And I'm like, wait, what? And, you know, and it was just like, there's no one holding me accountable. There's no, you know, she hadn't created any of those structures for herself that would allow her to actually like, define some easy actions she can take to move it forward and then have someone in her corner or herself or some structure or some app or whatever it is to just like, you know, help herself actually move forward on that. So those are some of the big ones we see. Just like, they're probably familiar to anyone who's ever started a project that's like self-driven. Where do you start? How do you get to that next level? What should that next level be? And how are you going to hold yourself accountable?
Right.
Some of the big ones.
Accountability is an interesting thing because most people have probably heard this at some point, whether it's about, you know, dieting or starting a new habit or whatever it is, that you're supposed to tell other people that you're going to start this new habit so that you have your social accountability. Now you've made this claim of, here is the thing that I'm going to do. And now, you know, you'll feel like a failure in their eyes if you don't do it. And that can be good, but, are those people really holding you accountable, and are you really inviting them to hold you accountable? Because a lot of people do talk about the thing that they're going to do with music because it's fun to talk about the thing that they're going to do with music. And it's more fun to talk about the thing that they're going to do with music than it is to put their butt in the chair and work through the frustration and get into the habit of sitting down and occasionally in whatever practice session or creative session, it's not going your way and you have to sit there anyway. And that is, to a degree, it can be less fun than talking about, you know, this vision that you have. So there's a fine line between like, yes, tell people what your goals are to help give you that social pressure to do them, but don't get all of your social satisfaction from having told people. And that's where finding the right people to actually keep you accountable, to give you tough love and hopefully a very loving and understanding way, but also a tough way where they're really helping you bring the best out of yourself, because a lot of us let ourselves get away with a lot, and a lot of our friends are going to let us get away with a lot too.
And I think that's a really good point. And I think there are different accountabilities from different people, right? Yeah. Like your partner or your wife or husband is going to have, or girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, is going to have a different accountability role to play with you than like your private teacher or even yourself. Right. And so your partner, you might ask them to hold you accountable to something probably a little bit bigger, a little bit less, requiring less knowledge of what you're trying to do. Hey, you know, I want to do this by Halloween. Can you help hold me accountable to that? And that's probably a very gentle accountability, right? It's like a, hey, love, you know, like, how's that thing going? You know, or what can I do to support you in that thing? the accountability you might choose to do with yourself might look way, way, way more specific, right? And that's like those sorts of accountabilities are putting in your calendar every day 30 minutes to practice, or scheduling blocks from noon to two in your calendar that are, no phone time, no browser time. I'm only working on XYZ, and then obviously if you have collaborators or friends, that can, be a very, another type of accountability where you're just saying, I'm going to achieve X by X date. And that collaborator might actually need that from you by that date or whatever. And so that becomes a very active and a highly engaged accountability. So I think playing around with the different kind of ways you can create those accountability structures for yourself can be really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is a good segue into talking about one of the strategies that you and I had talked about before we got on the call, which is goal setting. It's something we alluded to already, and I think this dovetails nicely into it. So yes, you want to keep yourself accountable, and hopefully you have other people who are helping to keep you accountable. But keeping you accountable for what? What are the goals? What are the goals along the way? Let's say you have a really big ambition, even a really big ambition, I think, you could measure. So maybe talk to us a little bit about goal setting. I just want to throw one idea out there, which is when I started writing for Sonic Scoop, this was a new area of my life. I was adding writing into what I do in addition to audio and all that. And in my late 20s, I had this goal, like, I want to, by the time I'm 40, to have one feature story in either the New York Times or the New Yorker. Ideally, the New Yorker. Let's say both. So I put down that, have a feature story by age of 40 in New York Times and the New Yorker. And I've got to say, that goal has completely changed. It's actually gone away. Although I think the New Yorker is a beautifully written publication, when I started studying things like economics, I had trouble continuing to read it. And the New York Times, at a certain point, it just kind of soured on a lot of mainstream media reporting in general, and just it wasn't doing what I thought journalism should do. And the goals kind of went away. But even though those goals were no longer my goals, when they were my goals, there was this endpoint and there are all these other things. Okay, if I want to get into a major publication, what are things I have to work on? I have to be at least this good. I have to get into networking. I have to learn more about, particular areas I want to write on to really set myself up as an expert. Oh, maybe I need to have some type of following and credibility. So all of those things made other little goals. So I guess what I'm saying is rather than have the big goal of, I want to be famous, like even if it's a stupid goal, like I want to be on the cover of Rolling Stone someday, that's a more specific goal. It might not be the best goal for you. And you might find after 2 years, that's a really dumb goal and actually has nothing to do with what I want out of life. But at least setting specific goals informs other goals. That's my take on it anyway. What's your take on goals?
Yeah, no, I love that example you gave. I think in my experience, not everyone responds that well to like really far in the distance goals, but some people really do. Mm-hmm. But the specificity of your goal is exactly what makes it fantastic, because the moment you lay out something like that, then it's so much easier to say, well, what are the actions I need to take to achieve that? And the getting famous thing is just, or like, I just want to play great music or whatever it is. It doesn't lend itself to as easily coming up with those actions that you need to do. Mm-hmm. So I tend to think about different levels of goals myself. I tend to think about the farther term ones often in terms of like vague visions, like what do I see for my life 5 years from now and stuff. And I do these exercises. I actually find them useful because I can, sit there and I'm like, oh, I'm surrounded by friends and I'm sitting there and I'm making music, every day and blah, blah, blah. And those things do have implications, right? Like if I'm surrounded by friends 5 years from now, then I got to be making investing in my friendships now, etc. And you can do the same thing with music. Like, 5 years from now, I'm running my own like record label, or I'm running my own studio or whatever it is, and then kind of walk back to what you need to be doing today to get there. So that's one level of goals. It's just like the kind of very vision oriented one. If you can get it really specific, like you said, I think that's fantastic. But then, for me, oftentimes I've found that I just tend to respond better personally to more near-term goals where achievability is very high on like my motivators. And I think that's a motivation thing, right? Like if I'm working to something from 7 years from now, it's actually a little bit harder for me to say motivated because, I'm like, well, I'll have next year to do it or whatever it is, you know? So it's really, I found for me, it's really important to say, okay, I'm going to have a monthly goal or something like that. So I might have a big vision. It's a little bit unspecific or it's a little bit kind of vague, but I'm going to take that. I'm going to put that into a 1 month goal that's highly, highly specific and achievable. In 1 month, I'm going to have real comfort and familiarity with this new software. I'm going to know how to use these new patches. I'm going to, you know, whatever it might be, but that like really highly measurable, time-based and specific kind of 1 month goal is, I find, really useful. And then from there, I can back into my day-to-day.
Oh, I think I agree with you. Even though I do stress the importance of having like a big stretch goal somewhere in the future, for me, it's to inform those little manageable goals, which is where you actually make your progress. You don't make your progress thinking and dreaming about your big goal all the time. You make your progress in the thing that you're going to do today, you know? Something that might be relatable for some people, you know, once my daughter was born, I started to see myself having a serious case of the dad bod. So I had to start going back to the gym, and I started doing some strength training. And I had this longer goal of, at some point, I'd like to be able to lift 300 pounds off the floor. That's double my ideal body weight. That would be a lot of fun. But you can't just go and lift 300 pounds off the floor. You start with an empty bar, and the next week you put 5 pounds on it, the next week you put 5 pounds on it, the next week you put 5 pounds on. And the first and most important goal is show up. So that's like goal number one. Show up for your actual sessions that you're going to do something on, and then have some kind of progressive goal within each one of those sessions. And hopefully those fit into, like you said, a slightly larger architecture of a weekly goal and a monthly goal. And you have these milestones along the way. So it's not from here to the endless top of the mountain, but there's stepping stones, I guess.
I love that. And I think a lot, one mistake that a lot of people who are kind of self-driving their education or their journey or whatever, one thing that a lot of people, I think, make a mistake around is not being specific around the time in when they are actually learning or when they're focused on that goal versus the time they're doing other things, right? So you might have your, here's a good example, right? Like a lot of producers or a lot of songwriters just like sit down and just start like messing around with ideas or playing with their gear, trying out different things with a new piece of software a new gear they've gotten or whatever it is. And they count that as practice or something like that, right? Like how many people go to practice and then are just, or with an instrument as well, and are just like playing around, messing around, and are not, and I think getting really deliberate with those time chunks in terms of, which is similar, I think, to what you're talking about in terms of, you know, what you're doing at the gym. Like this is showing up is the first thing, and I think often people forget to show up because they haven't set a goal or they haven't really focused in on like, what am I showing up to do today? Yeah. You know, like, is this time in front of your computer or in front of your rig is not the measure of success. The measure of success is like, you know, did I make some forward iterative momentum on the project I'm working on? You know?
Right. Now that's an absolutely great point. And also when you have those goals, it makes getting to the desk that much more addictive. It requires less motivation because it's kind of like your own little game of Candy Crush that you've set up in your life where it's like, I get to check off that box. I get to say that I did that. I get to say I touched that milestone. And it's so much more addictive. I love sitting down for the podcast every week. I'd never miss it. It's the same time every week. I sit down and I do a recording because I know I get to cross this off my list and put it out. There's that instant feedback. And if you have a goal that you are looking to achieve, you'll get that instant feedback. And even if you fail at the goal you set for yourself that day, hopefully you're not setting yourself goals that you're going to fail at. But even if you do, it just makes you want to get back the next time so you can actually do it. You know, you got something to prove now. So that's a really great point. And I like what you're saying. It's not just about sitting there and effing around and whatever. It's about making progress towards a goal. Maybe that goal is, I want to write a song a month because at the end of a year, I'll have an album. And then every one of those sessions, you know, should be to some degree around that. And maybe not every single session you sit down for is a writing session. Maybe there are other things that you have to work on around your career, but at least you'll have, you know, that focus of, okay, I have this annual goal, make an album. I have this monthly goal, write a song. Mm. I have this weekly goal, spend X amount of time, 5 times in the week, and hear what those, what I'm going to try to do at least in each of those 5 sessions. Maybe one's a lyric writing session, maybe one's, you know, working on percussion track session. There could be so many different ways that you craft it, but like you said, it's, they're all informed by those goals you set for yourself. So
yeah, really interesting. One thing that's great about that as well is just when you have those smaller chunk goals, you're like building in reflection points, you know? Mm-hmm. You like write your first song and then you write your second song, and then after your second song you're like, I don't want to write an album, you know, or whatever, you know. Totally. But just like by giving yourself those, once again, those like smaller peaks on the endless mountain, it's like you're stopping and looking at the view. Yeah. And you get up there and you realize, wait, this wasn't the right mountain. This was not the right, or whatever it is. Yeah. And that can be really useful as well. So, yeah.
That's absolutely, absolutely great point. So one of the other things for me is, we talked about this a little bit before we got in the call, which is the difference between active and passive engagement with learning. And it is so satisfying to sit down, read a self-help book, listen to a podcast like this one. And I hate to say this podcast can be used badly. You could be listening to this podcast as kind of a self-improvement porn, right? Where you don't end up doing anything. But ultimately, yep, Ian and I are not going to do this stuff for you. So can you talk a little bit about the difference between kind of an active and a passive approach to learning, and how can you use passive mediums like this one right here inside the framework of an active learning strategy?
Totally. Yeah, no, that's such a great question. Basically, the idea here is just, I say this as someone who's just a voracious reader, right? Like I just love reading. But the basic idea here is just watching or reading things and just kind of letting them soak over your brain is just not as effective at getting concepts or ideas to stick as engaging with that material in some way. Some people differentiate by calling this active versus passive learning. Now, that engagement can take many forms. Some people think of active learning as like project building, you know, actually kind of doing stuff. Some people might just think of it as like practicing, which all musicians are familiar with. But there are other ways to do it too, like, you know, note cards you might maybe used to do in college, or like writing a summary of what you just read after you've turned it off, or what you've just watched after you've turned it off, sharing it with a friend. All of those things are just ways of engaging with the content to make it actually stick. A couple things that I've noticed that really, I think in my experience, I think there's some good research to back this up, is figuring out ways to apply it to your interests and yourself. So if you do read a self-help book or whatever it is, you know, taking whatever you've just learned and saying, okay, well, now how does this fit into my life? And maybe writing down some of those ways. And making it highly specific again, you know, that's another theme just coming out of our conversation around goal setting. So one thing you might want to do after listening to this podcast is once again, pull up just a piece of paper and write down 1 to 3 things you're going to do differently this week after, you know, having listened to the podcast. Or, you know, we just had this whole conversation about goal setting, so maybe you go away from this podcast and you actually try writing a 1-sentence goal that you're going to achieve in a month that is highly measurable and specific. And just by doing that, that's a way of engaging with the material that you've just digested that's actually going to make it stick with you a little bit better than just assuming by watching it you've done the work. Or listening to it, you've done the work.
So if I selfishly tell everyone listening to this to go share this on social media or go to the YouTube video and like it and comment and tell us, you know, what you're going to take away from this one most specifically, I'd be doing them a favor and not just me. Is that what you're telling me?
That's it. That's exactly right. And, you know, even better than that, the deeper the engagement, the more you're going to get out of it, right? So liking this video is something or liking this podcast is something. Sharing it is another thing. Trying to summarize it to a friend of yours is going to be the best thing, right? Yeah, totally. So posting on social media with a 2-sentence
I watched this whole summary thing for an hour, so you don't have to. Here's the key takeaways in 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Go for it, people.
That's probably going to be really effective for your learning. And actually, if you leave if you do it right after the podcast, it's going to be effective. But if you do it a day later, and try and remember, that's something what I can't remember the name of the research, but someone calls it desirable difficulty. Mm-hmm. You know, as you make things a little bit more challenging for yourself, as long as they're not too challenging,
right.
Those desirable difficulties actually make the information stick
to
deeper.
Try to recall again a day later, that kind of thing. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always, I guess I've always kind of tried to put this into my learning a little bit. I'm remembering going back later in life, learning economics, because as an audio and music-y guy, I never really understood finances or dollars and cents and all that stuff until later in life. It wasn't until my late 20s I said, I don't really know what money is or why it's worth anything at all. Maybe I should understand this part of life. So looking into that stuff, I remember taking an online economics course. Actually, I took like five of them. It became really addictive. But they do try to build that stuff in, and I started to learn the wisdom of having tests. You know, we think about tests as a standardized test on what you're going to be judged on and all that. But the little quizzes along the way really just help with engagement. They help with recall. They help with, was I really paying attention in that moment? Maybe I have to go back and review this minute here to answer this question really precisely. So that is something I've always done. Something that I've always done also while reading is almost trying to debate the author. And, you know, stopping, rather than just having the words pour over me, stop there after a really core idea has been expressed and try to think of a few different rebuttals and then how that author might rebut what I'm saying. And try to almost have a conversation with the book. And that's been something that's always made me, I think, so addicted to reading, is because for me, it is an interactive experience where you can have a conversation with the author. And yeah, the author can't write back to you, but chances are their thoughts about your rebuttal is somewhere on that page. And you can also play devil's advocate and try to think, well, if he was going to rebut my rebuttal, what would he say? So that's a little far-fetched for music, perhaps, but there are definitely ways to engage with your favorite music as a musician, you know?
Well, yeah, I think one of the things that's we found very effective with music specifically is obviously like practice-related activities. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people misconstrue the idea of practice, but like you can like write debating with your author, your reading is kind of a form of practice of kind of how, communicating your ideas clearly, et cetera, et cetera. So as a musician, how can you take something you've learned and then turn it into a small, repeatable, but varied activity that will just stretch your fingers, right? Mm-hmm. And I say stretch your fingers as a pianist, but like it could be on the production software. So something we do a lot is like, you know, listen to a track that you love and then, I don't know, steal the bass line that you love from it and write just a 30-second groove that's completely different from that song using just that bass line.
Yeah.
And then do it again using that same bass line, but it's a different groove. And then do it again, but it's a different groove, but it's using the same bass line. And that's like you're practicing all the skills of you know, the different ways you could write and arrange and the different kind of tools you have in your musician's arsenal and stuff like that. So I think like the idea of practice there and taking is a way to take some of this stuff we've been talking about and just make it really specific for music. And how can I create like short, constrained activities that are not gonna be too long, but I can do them in a single sitting or something like that. And it's gonna allow me to repeat this one skill I'm trying to take on and repeat it each time, pushing myself a little bit further each time I do it.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And there's so many classic exercises in music, and I'm thinking right now about music writing and arranging that share that same idea. Like a very classic exercise is to take, rather than a bass line, a melody, and then to write a new harmony to that melody. And
totally.
Only anyone who's been through music school knows about this. Not everyone's been through music school, but even sometimes when you learn about something in a context like music school, you're like, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to stretch beyond what we're supposed to do in music school rather than sticking on those fundamental, you know, core lessons they're teaching you. And that's one of those things, if you could take a melody and just change the mood of it. Say, let's say this song feels kind of happy. How can we make it somber? How can we make it pensive? How can we make it quizzical, you know, just by changing what we're doing with harmony? So there's so many creative exercises you can do with that with music you're already enjoying. So I love that idea. Okay, so I have another question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the push and pull between being comfortable and having things to be easy so you can sit down and you're not struggling and you're setting achievable goals, and also stretching yourself and bumping up against frustration. I mean, I think a lot of people like, again, a classic example everyone's heard, New Year's Eve. A lot of people say, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to lose those extra 10 pounds. And then they do, and they go in really hard on January 2nd. And then they go really hard on January 3rd and they push themselves to the limit and then they never come back. That's the old cliche, right? And people can end up doing that with music practice too, by pushing themselves too hard. But you also don't want to end up going in and doing effectively nothing all the time and being so easy on yourself that you don't make progress. So how do you find the right balance between those two extremes?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. There are a few different things that you can do. So I actually like to, at Soundfly, we kind of like to delineate between practice and projects. And I'm curious if this will be helpful for anyone else. So a project is something that is tying in, leading to my longer term goal, like we were talking about earlier. The project's going to push me. It depends on what the project is, right? I'm doing it because I want to do it to get to a certain place. And so you want to make sure you're setting up projects that you can do, but there's not as much choice there. You're being driven by the needs of the project. And then I like to think of practice kind of slightly separately, so that you can, when you're sitting down, you can kind of be like, you know, am I working on my project right now or am I working on practice? Mm. And if you're working on practice, then you get a lot of freedom suddenly. And I find it really useful to allow you to scaffold your time much more effectively. So basically what you're looking to do when you're thinking about practice is you're looking to make it easy enough that you're sticking with it and you're not getting frustrated and you're not getting angry, but hard enough that you're pushing yourself a little bit and you're staying kind of engaged and you're getting better, yeah. Right? You know, there's actually a great example from this book, Make It Stick, about how baseball players who learn how to hit curveballs, let's say they have two different kind of cohorts. And in one cohort just got pitched 100 curveballs in a row. They were trying to learn how to hit curveballs better. And they just got they got pitched 100 curveballs in a row. And they got a little bit better at hitting curveballs. The other group got thrown 100 pitches with randomly curveballs thrown in, probably about a fifth of them. You would expect that the people who spent all their time hitting the curveballs would be better at hitting curveballs at the end of that. Mm-hmm. But actually it's the other group that got better at it because they were being pushed a little bit more. Like with that 100 curveballs, those people just settled into the zone of hitting. They kind of, you know, the first couple were challenging and then after that they just got in the zone and they just kept, you know. Whereas the other people had to think about every pitch that was coming their way. Right. So it was pushing their skills that much further. Yeah. And it kept them motivated and it kept them engaged. So they got better at all pitches, but they also got better at curveballs. Mm-hmm. And I love that for thinking about music as well, because when you sit down at your practice, whatever you're practicing on, whatever you're working on to improve at the moment, whether it's something in production or an instrument or whatever it is, you want to think about kind of what am I aiming to achieve in this specific session? Mm-hmm. And how much is it going to push me? And so what I like to do is I like to focus on a couple things in that session that I'm reviewing, mm-hmm. right? A couple things that maybe I've already got, a couple things that I might be kind of messing around with, you know, for a first time or something. And then a couple things that are problem areas in stuff that I've done before, you know, and really focus that in. And then every day you're kind of trying to ladder it up and just push yourself that little extra bit. So I mean, we like to say learning happens at the edge of your comfort zone. And I think that's true, but you're right. You can't go out and lift, you know, the most pounds possible on day one and expect that that's going to work. You have to start easy, stay motivated. Marathon runners have a fantastic, you know, schedule of stuff for that, where they, you know, you start by doing 1 mile and then you do kind of 1 mile for 3 weeks or something. And then you do like 6 miles and then you go back down to 3 miles or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it is exactly, but I've talked to people who do that. And it's very much about this, like, laddering yourself up.
Mm. Yeah. Two things I want to tie into that I think are interesting. One, some people who play music and are really serious about music started it very young in life and can end up having emotional hangups around music. And it can get hard to implement some of these new strategies because they have a way that they've always done it, or they have identity issues tied up in music. But if you can sometimes take some of these strategies that you're talking about and apply them to something else, like you want to run your first half marathon, and then you start building in those skills there, and you see how well they work there. Sometimes it's easier for people to take it back in.
That's great.
To their core thing. And I found that that's been true for me in the things that I do for a career versus the things I've done for a hobby. My hobbies, getting better at my hobbies where I don't have emotional baggage, has taught me ways to get better at my main career. So I know a lot of people have music as a hobby, but if music isn't supposed to be your hobby in for you in your life, then find some hobby other than music, because it'll teach you how to really apply yourself in your non-hobby. That's number one. Number two thing that I want to say, this curveball analogy is great because it has such a tie-in to music. And this is something that I'm always harping on with new bands about, you know, rhythmic feel. It's like when you're trying to hit 100 curveballs in a row, every single time you're expecting a curveball, you're in that zone. But when you think that there's going to be straight pitches, the reason curveballs are hard to hit is because you don't know the person's throwing a curveball, right? You think you're going to get a straight pitch and you have to change. No, wait, we're not in that world. We're in curveball world. You have to change things. The one thing I find a lot of newer rock musicians and pop, you know, world musicians have trouble with is switching back and forth between tempo feels, going from a groove that is based in a 4 to a groove that is based in a 3. And yes, they can do it. Like, oh, these are 16ths, these are triplets. Yes, they can do it. But can they do it so convincingly where you're changing sections and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that section, it changed, you know, because that's the thing when
Nailed it. Exactly.
When a group of 3 or 4 human beings can go from, you know, relatively complex 16th note thing to a relatively complex triplet thing or relatively, you know, or halftime thing. And they're all just at the same time locking into this mood change with each other because they've practiced those transitions. They've practiced when things change. I mean, that's the big thing where so many wonderful, you know, goosebump, you know, hair-raising moments happen in music. They happen in transitions. And those are the things that a lot of musicians could bring into their craft slightly more. It's like, yes, you have to work on this part separately from this part, but you also have to work on making parts change and making that transition have an emotion, a feeling. And that's, I think, one of the later things that a lot of musicians get good at. And the ones who are good at it, man, those are the ones who keep you coming back. Those are the ones who make you say, I need to give you money so I can see you do that again, preferably live.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I feel like I the moment you said that, I kind of, my mind immediately starts jumping into like, how would I practice that, you know? Yeah. And it's like one of those things where like, you know, I think you're right. Like I would practice that change in its like shortest chunk, like really robotically, like 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. Then I would leave and go do something else entirely. Mm-hmm. Then I would come back and practice it again a couple of times. Then I would put it into a song once or something like that, or a section once. Then I would do it in a different song that I haven't done. Then I would go back and do it, you know, if I was still struggling with it, I'd just do it robotically again 3 times. Then I would go, you know what I mean? And you're just like, you're finding different ways to take that one little skill that you're trying to do that might be challenging to you and just put it into a variety of contexts and space that out so that you're really getting it under your fingers. And I think that's what people mean when they talk about like fluency with a skill is like you've done all those little different contexts and different, like, you know, ways that you really just, you've got that, you know, you just feel that.
I love it. So I want to just go through a recap here and then give you a chance also to tell us a little bit about how you've integrated this, you know, through Soundfly and how this is a problem that you've been able to help people solve. So real quick, I just want to go through some of the major things we've discussed. We actually have a little idiot sheet here. We talked about this beforehand. We want to make sure that we hit all of these main points. And I know the first one was active learning. And this one is super important to me. I want to go into just a tiny bit of detail on this one. A little anecdote I forgot. I actually have one course called Mixing Breakthroughs that is 100% about active learning. It's none of the passive learning that people are used to on audio courses where like they're watching someone mouse around and mix a song. It's like, yeah, watching someone mouse around and mix a song is going to give you some ideas for how you can mix a song. But the only way you're going to get better at mixing a song is by mixing a song, right? You don't get better what you're going to do by reading the book about what to do. You might get better, though, by having read the book and then applying the stuff you read in the book. So Mixing Breakthroughs, I've got to tell you, we get occasionally returns on this course, and it's always for the same reason. People say, I thought this was going to be hands-on. And what they mean by hands-on, they said, I thought I was going to be watching you mix. And I always respond to them, and I just got one this morning, a return on it, and I'm going to respond. I'm going to say the same thing I always do. It is hands-on. It's your hands on your mix. So this is a really weird course where I'm like a mixing coach for people, Mixing Breakthroughs, where rather than watching me mix, it's like, here is a intellectual framework, a roadmap for how you can do it. And then here is the first exercise I want you to do. And if you actually do this exercise, you know, and you set aside some time, you will get better at mixing. And there's a whole series of these. And by the end of the course, people have done these exercises that are made to kind of break through a sticking point in mixing. And everyone I know who's done this course said, wow, like I got better faster by this course than any of the other courses I have where you just mouse around. But I also get people who don't get it and they want to return it because they're not watching me mouse around, because it's an active learning experience. It's on you rather than passive.
Yeah.
So it's almost me being your virtual mixing coach. I know you guys at Soundfly do something very similar in the sense that you give people coaches in music, but they're not virtual coaches. They're kind of real coaches you can talk to and they talk back. So how do you integrate active learning through Soundfly?
Yeah, that's like your philosophy is exactly in line with ours. I agree with you that that's what makes a great course, is people are taking that stuff they're learning and putting it into action. So the way we tried to tackle that problem is we basically looked at all of these issues that were kind of getting in people's way or helping people get in the way of themselves. And we said, okay, well, let's design a system that will allow us to tackle those things kind of one by one. And we tried a whole bunch of different things to do that. We had like group learning and we had like, you know, automated systems that would try and do this, that, and the other. The thing that actually worked, the thing that people just like experienced and came back to us again and again, was just assigning people a coach and having that coach follow up with them and give them feedback and have a specific structure for that coach to work with a student for. So, you know, we tend to work on a weekly basis. So you sign up with a coach, they'll take, you know, some of those big ideas in your head, they'll help you set goals for it. They'll break that goals in the goal into weekly exercises and weekly projects to take on. They'll give you feedback on those weekly goals and projects. They'll check in with you. They'll answer, hop on Skype and answer your, or whatever, phone, Google Meet, et cetera, and answer your questions and kind of really handhold you to get to the place where you want to be, but you're still doing the work, you know?
Right.
And we're just here to like say like you to make sure you don't throw the computer out the window if you're like getting stuck on something, you know, or to help you really like pinpoint that goal, kind of similar to what you're doing in your Mixing Breakthroughs course, is really saying, okay, you know, let's help kind of you figure out exactly what to do. Let's give you some timelines so you can stay accountable. Let's check in. Let's give you someone you'll trust who can give you feedback, help you pinpoint the areas to work on next week so that it can be like personalized to you. And yeah, that's the model that we're really running with.
Right.
And it's all about that. Some of the stuff you've been talking about around active learning, goal setting, and just helping people focus their time so that it's spent well.
Right. Wonderful. Well, I feel like we just both got our shameless pitches out for what we do. I know we both believe what we do. So I also have to give a shameless pitch to our sponsors for this podcast, Soundtoys. Check them out. One of my favorite plugin makers of all time, Soundtoys. Check them out. You can get anything they make for free at soundtoys.com. If you're into audio and you don't have the Soundtoys bundle yet, I don't know what you're doing. They make some really interesting, crazy stuff like the Echo Boy, like the Devil Lock Deluxe, like the little radiator, like the Primal Tap, just interesting delays, saturators, compressors, EQs, all sorts of fun stuff. Also, if you want to hear a podcast that's really more specific to just the music and studio production side of stuff, Gear Club has some of my favorite interviews with major producers and engineers. Check them out at gear-club.net. That's gear-club.net. They are the other best podcast when it comes to everything you need, audio and music, so check those guys out. And then there's my courses, Mixing Breakthroughs, we talked about, and then Mastering Demystified, which is a little bit of a hybrid between the two, where you're really seeing me master songs, because I think there are differences that people aren't used to listening to for themselves. So there's a lot more of me doing stuff and me giving you audio examples. And in addition to that, there's all the theory and all the exercises I give you. And then there's Mixing Breakthroughs, which is, I think, the closest thing to like a virtual mix coach course, where it's really putting you through the paces, giving you a roadmap, helping you learn better what you do. I want to go through these five things again real quick that Ian brought up and they implement over at Soundfly. So we were talking about the active learning, you know, being an active learner rather than a passive learner who's just watching tutorial videos and not implementing them. The goal setting, and I think having, you know, a coach or a mentor can help you with the goal setting. That's possibly one of the biggest things, helping them evaluate your goals. Is it a reasonable goal? Is it a good goal? Should you be pushing yourself harder? Are you pushing yourself too hard? Someone who's seen other people succeed and fail, who can take a third-party look at your goals or just help give you ideas for good goals. That's fantastic, and having an accountability partner like you'd get through Soundfly. they're creating constrained and focused practice sessions. I think that comes out of the goal making. But again, right. having a partner or a coach can help you design what an actual session would look like. Because it's enough for us to talk about this in the abstract. But once someone who's seen other people succeed and fail knows what your goals are and knows where you are now, they can help you design practice sessions to help you get there, which is, I'm sure, something you guys do at Soundfly. Finding the edge of your comfort zone is another big principle that we talked about, of making sure that you're not doing stuff that's so easy that you don't progress and you're just kind of effing around, but also not setting yourself up for failure by feeling like you're banging your head against the wall every session. And then the last big strategy, and this is huge for people who actually succeed, is finding support. And ideally, you know, your family and your friends are one type of support, but unless they're real experts in your field, some people have family and friends that are real experts in their field, maybe they're not the only kind of support you need. And maybe there are people who understand your field better, are good coaches, knowledgeable in it, know what a good goal is, know what a good practice session would look like, have a feeling for what has hung other people up in the past. Finding someone like that can be excellent. A great way to find it is in the workplace. If you can get a gig, you know, with people who are even better at what you're trying to succeed in, that's a wonderful way. But to even get in the room with those people to begin with, you're probably going to need some coaches beforehand who are the coaches that you most likely have some kind of paid mentor relationship with, a teacher, you know, a professional coach who's really helping you. They used to call these music teachers, one way of talking about it. But so many of us have had music teachers who aren't that. They're not a coach, right? They're just someone who assigns the lessons in lesson book 4 and then says, did you practice? And they listen to your practice and tell you if you made a mistake. I know I made a mistake, right? A real coach is trying to program things around your goals, around your interests, giving you that feedback. So I know that's something you guys provide at Soundfly, something I try to do in a virtual way in Mixing Breakthroughs. And honestly, even people at a very high level often have coaches and mentors in their lives just because it's easier that way.
Definitely.
Good stuff. So did I leave anything out about, can you give us a last little pitch for Soundfly? People should check it out, particularly if they want to learn music performance and I believe music composition to a degree. What do you guys really specialize in there at Soundfly?
Yeah, we actually do a lot of production work. And in particular, I'm not the producer, so don't, I'm more of a, I'm learning. I'm more of a student at Soundfly. Yeah. You know, we designed it so that I can learn. but we do a lot of people come to us who are producer songwriters, you know, people who are trying to write their own music and want to use software to do it and are trying to understand how to do that. Career-based people, we do a lot of career-based work. We do composition and songwriting and stuff like that. So those are probably the three big areas: production and producers, songwriting and business, and then the intersection of those three.
Nice. Now, when you say business, is it really specific to music and audio business, or is it more general business principles for people?
Yeah, more specific to music and audio business in particular.
Gotcha. Well, maybe I'm going to go over to Soundfly because I'm always looking to improve in a few areas of my life myself. Good sir, Ian Temple, thank you for joining us on this week's podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Any last ideas or words you'd like to leave the good people with?
I think we've probably given them enough to digest. As long as they go and write it down so that they practice that recall.
Preferably in the comments or after sharing this on social media. No, but seriously, and honestly, if you comment down there, I respond to like comments that warrant a response. I read every single comment there in YouTube. If you're not on the YouTube version of this, and like many people, you're listening to it in podcast form, then you can always write me an email at podcast@sonicscoop.com. If you want to hear more podcasts like this one, less like this one, I read every email that comes in through at podcast@sonicscoop.com. If you got any advice for us there, definitely hit me, or any questions you'd like to see us address in future podcasts. Last big shout out to our sponsors for this podcast, which are SoundToys. Thank you guys for making some of the best plugins out there. You can get anything they make for free at soundtoys.com. That's soundtoys.com. Also, if you want more podcasts after this because you're in a passive learning mode, maybe because you're on a long car ride or you're looking for something for the commute tomorrow, check out Gear Club, gear-club.net, or type in Gear Club wherever you get your podcasts. Fantastic. You're not going to regret it. Two great producer engineers talking to other great producers and engineers. Last but not least, I don't think Soundfly is a sponsor for this, but they're an awesome company. If you liked Ian and his strategies and ideas, check them out at soundfly.com. They also have a great blog there called Flypaper. We've had one of their writers on here in the past talk talking about what went into the biggest top 40 hits of the past year. We analyzed their structure together. I'll link to that one in the show notes. And also, thanks to our sponsors, us, Sonic Scoop. Check us out at sonicscoop.com. Subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe on YouTube. Like, share, comment, send questions. We love to hear from you guys. Thanks for hanging out with us. See you next time.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.